the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it with no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, it's the world's greatest podcast, NBA preview show with the great Mike Schmitz. We're going to get into all the draft choices, surprises. Of course, we'll have to talk about a Duke player, and of course, we'll have to talk about a Kentucky player. It's Mike Schmitz joining us right now with Seth Greenberg. I'm Dan Dokic on the world's greatest podcast.
All right, we'd like to welcome in Mike Schmitz, NBA draft guru and basketball guy that just absolutely lives, eats, and drinks. So I got a question for you, Mike, before we get started. If you did a podcast with a guy that said this, and Taylor, if you can cue up what Dokic said about me, would you ever do it again? Go ahead.
I had a sock next to the bed. I rolled it up, and I said, yeah.
My podcast partner, when I said that the Turner guy shouldn't have been out on the field celebrating because you won a World Series doesn't mean you have your own set of protocols. So you win the World Series, and all of a sudden, all protocol goes out the window. Like, he couldn't have celebrated by just waiting a little bit. Before we get into this, you're the deciding vote. What's your take on that?
I'd be done. I'd mail it in. Seth, I don't know what you're doing, man.
That was my goal. Because he's become an old curmudgeon. You win the World Series. Who cares? What do you mean you win? When you win the World Series? And like, all right, we're 2 weeks out. What happened? Is anybody dead? Is anybody sick? Is anybody nothing? You know, because we all know it's 99.98%. Sniffles. They'll be all right.
You know what? Yeah. So if you're the parent, a daughter, or son, or aunt, or uncle of the 230,000 people that have passed away, I don't think they'd agree with you. End of conversation. Now let's get into the conversation. You're 100% wrong. You live in Indiana. You think you're a head coach,
and you say what? You're still in head coach mode where you think people give a rat's ass about what you say. That's totally different. The people that have passed away. I'm just simply going by the numbers. 99.98% of people in Justin Turner's age group have no problem. They're fine. Those other numbers, don't throw that on me. I'm going by science. And don't be the head coach guy. You haven't been a head coach guy for 8 years. So nobody gives a rat's ass what you have to say. Just stop. Mike Schmitz, how are you? Is LaMelo Ball any good? Let's just stop him right now. Head freaking coach mode. Mike, LaMelo Ball any good?
He's a talent. He's a talent. There's no doubt about it. There are definitely going to be some question marks just because, you know, he hasn't really finished a season over the last few years. He's been all over the map. You know, I've seen him in Lithuania. I've seen him with Chino Hills and Spire in Australia. So, I think teams wonder, if he's going to buy in, you know, over the course of his career consistently. But in terms of talent, he's a joke. I mean, 6'7" point guard.
Mike, is his dad still a thing for NBA teams?
I think deep down, I think it is. You always have to think about it, right? And how big of a role is he going to be when things aren't going great? But I do think, they hope that family learned from kind of the Lonzo experience in LA and can hopefully kind of, move forward from that. To me, he's the biggest talent in the draft in terms of like sheer ability.
More so than Wiseman?
Yeah, I think so. If you look at how, the game is being played today, I mean, it's 6'7", 6'8", ball handlers who can make everyone better. I mean, that's kind of what you want in today's game. So we can talk about LaMelo's abbreviated resume, but then you look at Wiseman as well, just playing the three games. So I think those are question marks on his side as well.
Yeah, Mike, here's my thing. How much value do guys put in? I've watched LaMelo Ball forever, and obviously he was actually at camp for a day with us. I mean, great vision, great size, great feel, makes passes that very few can make with both hands. Not a great shooter, doesn't defend. But how much do guys put in terms of, is that dude a winning player? How will he interact, and will he make our team better long term? Like, in terms of, like to me, Is a guy a winning player? Does he add to winning? What is his character? How does he interact with the rest of his teammates? How much is that a factor? Not just LaMelo, but just across the board.
I think it's you weigh it versus the talent, right? So if you're a guy with mediocre talent, then if you don't have all those intangible things, then they're not interested, right? But if you're a guy who has amazing talent and makes people around you better, then I think that's gonna lead to winning down the line if you put the right pieces around that type of guy. So I think it's important to teams. It's especially important to the championship type teams, like, you know, Golden State, the Spurs of previous years. But I do think it's kind of like, you know, that hot crazy scale, right? Like you gotta balance it against the talent, and that's what makes LaMelo in particular so tough to kind of wrap your head around, because the talent is ridiculous, but there are certainly some questions.
The best case scenario is Golden State as opposed to Minnesota in terms of culture, right?
Yeah. I think every prospect in this draft would be dying to go to Golden State, you know, and learn from those guys and be held accountable by some of the voices there. And, you know, that's where you go to get better, develop, and win, right? So
I don't know how to say this guy's name. I always say when people ask me, you know, where's this guy, where's that guy? I say, look, I got to give you a non-European division because I don't know the European player. But in doing a little research before you came on, there's a kid out of Israel that is projected by some to be the second pick in the draft, is projected to go to Golden State. Abdija, is that how you say it? I don't know how you say it, but about him.
Yeah, Denny Avdija. He's a stud. I love his game. You know, kind of opposite of some of those guys we talked about, he's somebody who plays in every tournament, every event, every FIBA championship. You know, father is ex-Yugoslavia national team player. So he's half Serbian, half Israeli. So he's got this interesting blend of toughness and fight that you don't always see in prospects. He's about 6'9", 6'10", 230 pounds. So he's really the size of almost a four, but can play, you know, on the perimeter with the ball, without the ball. So he's played over 100 games of professional experience as well. So he's a guy who's ready to step in from day one and kind of fits today's modern game.
In the world of Luka Doncic, where we've seen him come in at such a young age and play at such a high level, has Doncic changed how people may look at this kid? Because, man, he's played everywhere as opposed to an Anthony Edwards who has played, you know, 1 year. I mean, has Doncic changed the way people look at the age or slash experience gap?
Yeah, I think he's certainly helped, you know, the case of European prospects, just given the fact that, you know, he can come in and dominate the NBA like he did. You know, I think some people, there's the other side of it too, which is, hey, this kid isn't putting up the same production that Luka was in the EuroLeague, so he's not Luka Doncic. What is he? But I think people need to keep in mind that Luka is a generational talent, and we've never seen an 18, 19-year-old win MVP of the EuroLeague. So I think people see, okay, Avdi is playing 15 minutes a game. There's no way he should be, you know, a top five pick. But I will say, to even be on the floor for 15 minutes a game against Barcelona, Real Madrid at that age, speaks to his talent. So
yeah, my brother coached against him a couple of times, and like he said, please, enough, you know, it's not fair to compare anyone to Luka Doncic. I mean, right. it's just not fair. The question is, like Brad says, really good floor game, tough rebounds, fiercely competitive. Will he be able to shoot it well enough?
Yeah, that's
the NBA for spacing.
That's been the question. And in the Israeli league, he actually, you know, which your brother coaches, obviously, he shot 36% from three, I believe. You know, in some FIBA competitions, he's been good from three. They actually had their league resumed after kind of all the COVID shutdowns. And rather than, you know, flying out to LA and kind of starting his pre-draft process and getting his Instagram clicks and all that, like, he stayed out there and he played in every single game, and he shot it really, really well from three, ended up winning MVP of the league. So I think he's going to make enough shots. He's a little bit all over the place at times. His free throw shooting has been very up and down throughout his career, but he's a shot maker. He's a competitor. He's extremely confident in himself. And so I'm not that worried about his shooting.
All right, you saw two guys the other day. You saw Tyrese Maxey, who I thought was in phenomenal shape. Watch, obviously, you can't tell watching it on TV the same way you guys when you're right there. Shot it well, lifted his shot up a little bit off his face, got it above his head. Then Anthony Edwards, who to me looked a little bit out of shape in a lot of ways and not as explosive, but not as quick. What was your takeaway? And 1-on-0, I don't get anything out of anyway. I'm not, you know, that's like, you know, for football when they do the pro days and every route is scripted. But what was your takeaway from those two guys?
Yeah, Maxey, I was really impressed. And I actually popped in and saw him work out, you know, before, about a week before that event. And I mean, he's been doing these 6 a.m. workouts every day, 2-a-days, drenched in sweat, body looks great, shot looks good. You know, he's taking the process like as seriously as any other prospect in this draft I've seen. And that's one of the things I like about him most. Yeah, Edwards, I thought looked a little bit heavy set. You know, I think he would tell you he's still kind of working into peak shape, and you know, he's got that kind of body type that can thicken up a little bit. So I think getting his diet right and all that is going to be really important for him. You know, his shot was a little bit up and down there, but I think he shoots it really, really easy. I mean, that's the thing that stood out to me most, honestly, is just how easily the game comes to him. Like, I mean, he can step into 35 footers, no problem. And we saw glimpses of it this season. You know, I was at that Michigan State game when, you know, he looked like an NBA All-Star. I mean, you could have thrown Kawhi Leonard out there and he would have still, you know, did what he did. So, you know, he's the best scoring talent in this draft. And I think for him, it's just about keeping the body right, finding more ways to exist with other good players, bringing it defensively, and just becoming a winning player. But I think that's on the NBA team at some point, you got to look and figure out who is the best talent. And now it's up to us to get the best out of the best talent. Like, we got to build the infrastructure, and that we always say, oh, if they're going to the Spurs, they're going to be great. Or, oh, if they're going to go to the Warriors, they're going to be great. Okay. Well, there's a reason, right? Because those guys have a good infrastructure and they turn talent into production.
You got anybody, you know, as you go through this draft, a lot of people have said, this is a bad draft. I would trade the pick, that kind of stuff. Do you buy that? I mean, where are you at with that?
Yeah, I think it's a deep draft, to be honest. I think there are a lot of really good players that can help you win, you know, whether it's college veteran types, a lot of international prospects. I think that sentiment is more about the fact that people don't see a Zion Williamson or a John Morant at the top, right? I don't think they're seeing this can't miss type of star. But when you go down the line, I mean, Isaac Okoro is going to be a really, really good player. Obi Toppin is going to be a really, really good player. Tyrese Halliburton is going to be a really, really good player. Jalen Smith. And then you can even go into the second round, like Xavier Tillman is going to be a really good player. So I think there's a lot of guys with college experience who are going to be able to step in and have a major impact. It's just a matter of is there that kind of generational star that people are used to seeing?
Onyeka Okongwu. I look at him and I say he might be as ready to impact as any guy in the draft. Am I way off?
No, love him. I mean, I live out here in LA, and so I've been able to get a up close look at him. And, you know, I always say if you put him and James Wiseman in a gym and you have each guy go through a 20-minute 1-on-0 workout, like, you're not going to leave there taking Onyeka, right? Like, his name doesn't pop like Wiseman's does. But his instincts defensively, the way he can guard pick and roll in drop situations, in switches, he can hedge and recover, he protects the rim. You know, he's a day one contributor just because of how smart he is in those areas. And you guys know with bigs, like, it takes 3-4 years to figure out how to guard pick and roll sometimes, right? I'm looking at some of these young bigs in the NBA, and some of them are still struggling with some of those nuances. So I think that's what's going to make him really effective. And that's why you hear these Bam comps. It's not so much the offense, like Bam has the handle and the passing and all that. I don't know if he'll have that. But on the defensive side of the ball, I think he could be that type of player.
When you look at a guy like Halliburton, you know, he can do about everything, except he's really, really skinny. Now, the NBA rules, you know, back in the day, you had the arm bars, you had the hand checking, all that kind of stuff. Obviously, he's got to gain weight. Obviously, he's got to work on it. But coming in at his size, a big detriment to teams, or, you know, hey, look, we'll put muscle on him.
Yeah, I think they're not too worried about the strength aspect of it. You know, you look at a lot like Shai Gilgeous, you know, he was thin, right? And he's been able to come in and have a major impact. I think for teams, it's more about is he a guy who can go get you a bucket? And not so much because of the frame, but like, does he have enough juice off the dribble, late clock? Are you drafting him to be that type of guy? But he does everything else, man. And I think with his range, like the fact that he can shoot it from 30, if you go under or you dare him, then, you know, he's playing out of these drop situations. And then he uses his IQ, his size. He can see over the top, make everyone around him better. I think he's a total student. I love his game and the way he's wired as a kid.
Yeah, he reminds me of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander so much. It's incredible to me. I mean, I think very, very similar. Speaking of a guy people didn't get a chance to see because he got hurt this year, the Naismith kid out of Vanderbilt.
Yep.
Big, big time range. Good NBA body. Like, how do you go about evaluating a guy like that? Is that a risk? Like to me, I look at Tyrell Terry and I look at Naismith and I go, how do you go about evaluating those two guys?
Yeah, with Aaron, it's tough because he only played one SEC game, yeah, right? And the year before he was good, but he wasn't this, you know, future top 10 lottery type of talent, right? So, but I think when you do your homework on the kid and how he's wired and how he works, and then those risks kind of fall by the wayside a little bit. I just feel like anytime you're 6'6 with a 6'11 wingspan and can shoot the cover off the ball, then you got a chance to be pretty good. So I think the questions for him are, you know, defending consistency, you know, defending with consistency, and then also, you know, being able to make reads if they're going to be running him off of screens and different actions. Like, can he make the proper reads as a passer? But at the very least, you know, he's a guy who's going to come in and make a ton of shots.
You mentioned depth. And according to some of the, you know, mock drafts, there's going to be some pretty good athletes, maybe Cassius Stanley. I saw Desmond Bane at TCU, and I thought to myself, wait a second, man.
Yeah.
Guess who put the ball in the bucket? You second round looking, you know, there's some chance there for some guys, is there not?
Yeah, 100%. And that's why I love this draft. Bane is a great name. I mean, he shot over 40% from three throughout his college career. He's a young senior, great kid, really smart. I think he's going to be able to help somebody right away. You know, Malachi Flynn, the kid out of San Diego State,
yeah.
His name people love, great floor game, tough kid, shoots it. What, they were 29-2, I think, this year. So, I mean, he can help you right away. Trey Jones, Cassius Winston, Cassius Stanley, you mentioned the athletes. You know, there are a lot of guys like Peyton Pritchard, another one. Like, I mean, that kid has the cojones. He's not afraid, makes big shots. So I think if you're a team in that, like, you know, 20 to 25 to 40 range, you got to feel pretty good about getting someone who can help you in his first years of his contract.
How do you look at, like, say, a Pritchard, a Cassius Winston? I mean, like, they're two winning players. Those are two tough guys. You know, both have strengths and weaknesses. Like, I look at Cassius Winston as a 10-year pro. Maybe I'm way off. Yet, I look at some of these mock drafts, and people have him in the 40s to 50s. You know, I know he's not a great defender. He's improved defensively. Is there a better ball screen player in the draft than Cassius Winston? Shoots it, reads it, advances it. How hard is it for him to try? I look at Jalen Brunson, and people said similar things about Jalen Brunson that they said about Cassius Winston. I think Cassius is actually more skilled offensively. Where do you see him?
Yeah, no, you're right about the ball screen stuff. I mean, he's probably the most polished pick and roll player in the draft. And if it were up to us, I think he would be at the back of our first round. He might still be. I think teams more so worry about, can he survive defensively in the NBA? I think that's the biggest knock, right? And if you can't survive defensively in the NBA, then you better be special like a Trae Young, right? To warrant kind of playing those big minutes. But I think he's an NBA player all day. I do. And so same with Pritchard. They're different. You know, he's not that type of floor game. He's more wired to score, but like, he's 200 pounds. You know, he's sturdy. He's got kind of a Brunson body, to be honest. And he shoots it deep. So those are two guys I think that are going to make a roster, whether they go 28 or 38.
Mike, if I said to you in 5 years, 3 years, whatever, these four guys are going to be NBA All-Stars, who would you pick?
Ooh, that's tough. I would say, I'm going to say Ball. I'm pretty sold on his talent. I mean, it's going to be situational, but I would say Ball, Edwards, And outside of that, it's tough. Like, you know, I think Avdija's got a chance to be that, just given his versatility. And I think he's got a little more upside than people think. And then, you know, I don't know. I would say Onyeka's got a chance to be that as well. So those are probably the four. You know, Obi Toppin offensively has a chance to be that. Like, he's I would pick Obi Toppin to win Rookie of the Year, to be honest, just because shortened offseason, going to step in right away. Like, he's ready to go, and he's going to put up huge numbers. Doesn't need plays called for him. Rim run, lob catch, shoot threes. His fan base is going to love him. So those are kind of – those are the guys that come to mind. I mean, Wiseman's got a chance to be that too. I just think he's going to take some time.
No, I was going to Obi Toppin. I think he's a terrific passer.
Me too.
That dude's a freaking pass.
Yep, no doubt.
Here's the interesting thing about the draft. I remember Brad Stevens telling me, Dan, there's about 20, 25 superstars. Everybody else is a role player, you know, pretty much. Now, you can be an all-star as a role player, that kind of thing. But Obi Toppin, to me, does he – how do I put this? Does he have a little bit of an it factor? I mean, we coach a long time, and it's hard for – even though Dayton's been really good over the years, going back to the 60s, it's hard to put Dayton – you know, in the position that they were in this past year is possibly or probably a one seed. Does Obi Toppin have a little bit of something special, you know, that maybe other guys don't? It feels like it to me, Mike.
Yeah, he's an energizer and everybody rallies around him. You know, I was at that Maui Invitational. He's pumping up the crowd. He's smiling. He's hitting step back threes. No, I think you're right. And we got to stop looking at him as a 22-year-old, to be honest. I know that's his age, but he's on such a different trajectory than your typical 22-year-old. I mean, we've all heard the story, right? He had basically no offers out of high school. He does the year of prep school. He grows. He's a late bloomer. You know, he's not some guy who's looked like that since he was 18 years old. And the it factor, I think, is definitely there. The question I think people have for him is just like, where does he fit in defensively? Is he a guy who is going to be like, you know, maybe a John Collins who will give you, you know, 22 and 11? And, you know, at good efficiency, probably he's a better passer than John, but like, is he going to leak points defensively? You know, and I think that's what people wonder, like, is he quick enough to guard the perimeter? And if you're going to play him as a small five, is he going to just struggle against, you know, Jokic's, Embiid's, all that? Because he played almost only five this year, right? And I think he benefited from that a little bit, just having skill guys and shooting and ball handlers around him. But I love his floor. I love what he's going to be from day one. Like I said, I'd pick him to win Rookie of the Year. And I do think he's in that group of a guy who has all-star potential.
He's got those high hips, which is a little different. How about Sadiq Bey? I'm a big winning player. Maybe it's the college coach me. I want guys that I know exactly what I'm going to get out of them. And I look at Sadiq Bey. I look at – you talk about 22-year-olds. Why is a 22-year-old thought of as a guy that's, you know, almost over the hill? Like, we can't value him. He's 22. I'm not sure how much better he can get. Yet we'll look at a European player – who's 22, who's, you know, productive and a good, very good player, but look at him a little differently. Why? What is the big deal about being a little bit older? Because I look at those guys that are a little older, whether it's an Anobi or, you know, you go right down the league, those guys come in and help you win.
Yeah, I think it's more a matter of when you're looking at the very top, right? It's more a matter of if you're investing in like a top five pick. Like Chris Dunn is a guy that comes to mind, right? Who was super, super productive, 22 years old when he was at the NBA draft combine, and then just hasn't really turned the corner in the NBA, right? And if you take a guy like that in the top five like he was, then – okay, like it didn't work out for you, right? So I think if you're looking like where Sadiq Bey is going to be drafted, which is maybe in the late lottery, perfect. Take a guy who can help you, you know, right away. And each franchise is different. Each team is in a different situation. Like, you know, some guys have time to wait on these younger prospects, and some don't. You know, I think youth oftentimes, if you sell youth to your owner, then that'll buy you a little bit more time on contract, right?
Man, that is no lie, brother. This is going to be a little bit of a shift, and you may not know the answer. Is there anybody going into his second year this coming year in the NBA that you expect to make a big jump? Maybe that was drafted, you know, fairly early last year.
Yeah. Okay. So what we have, Zion, Ja, obviously. You know, I've always been a fan of Darius Garland. I think he's a guy who could figure it out as he continues to grow and get healthy. You know, that was kind of his rookie year last year. I think RJ Barrett as well, as they continue to kind of pieces around him. You know, he's got that alpha dog mentality. I think he fits with the Tibbs, like he can handle, you know, that type of coaching. You know, Hero, obviously, we saw was really, really good. I'm looking forward to seeing what Chuma Okeke is like. You know, we all saw him on that Auburn made, and, you know, he's such a smart, skilled player. Had the injury, obviously, but I want to see what he's looking like and how he's developed, because he's really what teams are looking for in today's game. Grant Williams also, I think, could make a big jump, you know, for the Celtics. We already kind of stepping in and playing a role, but, you know, I think they've got to be pretty excited about what they have in him with his toughness, his IQ and all that. So definitely, you know, some guys I think could continue to improve. Cam Johnson, I thought, showed some nice things for the Suns in the bubble. So, yeah, last year's draft, I thought it was going to end up as a pretty good one.
You mentioned RJ. What about RJ Hampton? Have we talked about him?
No. I mean, total speedster, you know, complete blur in the open court, you know, can really, really score the ball. And I think for him, it was always just about, is he going to make enough shots? And is he going to be like a full-time on-ball guy? Or is he just going to be one of these open court, get downhill, a score finisher types, right? But from everything I've heard, he's really, really improved his body. He's improved his shot. Again, that's the pre-draft process for you, right? Everyone's now, you know, gained 30 pounds of muscle and has a 60-inch vert, and they're shooting 83. yeah, I mean, I think he's got a chance to go in the lottery. You know, people really like his size. And it's hard to kind of put into context what it means to play 20 minutes a game in a pro league, right?
Let's flip ahead to next year. Who are you excited to kind of get a really good feel on for this cut? Like, we're going to play college basketball. It's going to be different.
Yep.
NBA guys might not be able to see a guy practice, might be able to see him play in real life if that arena allows fans in. Who are the guys that you're most excited to kind of get a feel for?
Yeah, Cade Cunningham obviously is the headliner. I think I think honestly a lot of GMs would take him number one in this draft in 2020, just because he's so mature, he's big, he's long, he's smart, he's improved as a shooter, he's tough. I think he's going to be early, you know, number one. Evan Mobley, just being out here on the West Coast, obviously. Yeah. At SC, I mean, he cleans up everything defensively, and just his ability to handle the ball and pass at that size is pretty unique. You know, I like this kid Keon Johnson going to Tennessee. I think they got somebody in him. You know, he's not exactly as big as Isaac Okoro. He's probably a little better shooter, but in terms of like athlete, physical, tough, can handle and pass, he's interesting. Caleb Love. Kid going to Carolina, you know, I think he's ready to have an impact. I like this class, man. I honestly feel bad for this 21 draft just because they really got slighted given pandemic. Like, teams usually see them at McDonald's Week, Hoop Summit, Jordan Brand. They really get a good feel for all these kids, and they're not going to have that. And so in college is going to look really different. So it's going to be strange, but you know, the incoming freshmen are really good. And then you have some returners too, like James Bouknight. You know, I think he's a guy. Oof. Yeah, he can really fill it up. Right.
Really good.
Yeah. He's got a chance to be pretty good. The kid Romeo Weems, I think, is, you know, he kind of fits that profile teams are looking for. And then last, you know, the kid BJ Boston too. I mean, he's a monster going to Kentucky. Like, he can really, really score the basketball at that size. So it's a great class, man. Then the G League stuff too. We'll see how that all works out, you know, just getting eyes on Jalen Green and Kuminga and some of those guys will be interesting too.
Will they play, do you think? I mean, if the NBA doesn't start till like, say, February, what will happen to those kids?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to speak on it with much certainty, but I know they've been up there and practicing, and you know, they've put in a good system to, you know, help provide not just basketball stuff, but life skills, and have a lot of, you know, people who have been around the league and stuff like that kind of helping to guide them. Who they're going to play on a regular basis, I don't know. I think that's, you know, still kind of to be determined. But you know, Jalen Green, like, he's still going to go in the top five. You know, Kuminga's still going to go really high. And so we'll see what it looks like. But it's going to be a really good draft.
I would be remiss if we didn't talk about a Duke player.
Yep. Gotta do it.
We got the Kentucky guy in with Maxie early, but we got to talk about Vernon Carey. I mean, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, Vernon's, he's maybe the most productive big we've seen, like a per 40 minute basis, at that age. I mean, his numbers are ridiculous. And I think teams are really all over the board with him. You know, some are, hey, this kid should be a late lottery pick. You know, what are we talking about here? And then I think some are also wondering, you know, bigs who struggle guarding pick and roll, how much of a place do they have in today's game, right? So I think for him, it's just really important to continue, you know, making shots from the perimeter, to continue becoming a plus passer, because if he's not going to be, you know, at least adequate defensively, then he's got to be really, really good on offense, which I think he has a chance to be. So for me, he's going to play a role in the NBA for a long, long time. It's just, is that as a starter or is that as kind of like your first big off the bench?
Intriguing thing to me that you've been talking about, and I'm not so sure this was the way it was back in the day. When you talk about bigs and you talk to different people around the NBA, you know, so many people always historically wanted to talk about offense. You know, he can shoot it. He's got a great hook shot. He blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Or they talked about shot blocking, rim protection. Well, you're talking about something else that Seth and I have been talking about for a long time. How important is it, or where is it on the list of things to be able to play pick and roll defense?
I think it's huge. And that's a big reason why, you know, Miami was able to have so much success with a guy like Bam, even though they were smaller. I mean, you look at the way that they're rotating and their activity off the ball, even though they played a little bit smaller. I mean, incredible. And that's, you know, what makes that coaching staff so good. But I think that's what teams want in today's game. And because if you're getting carved up in pick and roll, then you're going to really have a hard time. You know, you got to be, I mean, even Jokic, right? Like, that dude is a monster offensively. He's a complete stud. But at the end of the day, he's going to have to get enough stops in pick and roll, right? For them to win on the biggest stage, like win an NBA final. So I think it's become increasingly important. And we talk a lot about switching, like, can he switch, can he switch, can he switch? I think that's important. But the reality is teams want to give up contested non-paint twos, right? And so that's why you'll see a lot of teams playing out of these drop coverages, because that's what they want to give up. Now, for the big, it's about being able to not get exposed in those type of situations. And that's why I love, like, an Onyeka Okongwu, because he's ahead of his years, you know, in those areas.
Just don't drop on Jamal Murray. He'll make every freaking pull-up jumper there is.
Exactly. He'll make you pay.
I think it is fascinating. I mean, you think about it. I mean, it goes from a dominant player, but he doesn't have a place on the floor defensively. And like the drop coverages and being able to recover, or showing him being able to recover or switch. I mean, like, the versatility of, like, Bam showed was ridiculous. That everyone, who would have ever thought that everyone was looking for the next Bam?
Right. I know. He's made some kids a lot of money. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, and it's funny, like, I don't know if anyone's, like, did you guys see he's basically a point center, right? Like,
it's unbelievable what he does.
What he did at Kentucky and seen this coming?
Mike, last summer, maybe not this past summer, the summer before.
Yeah,
they did what you were saying. Miami had him bringing the basketball down the floor. Miami basically in the summer league said, Bam, you're bringing it down. You're doing it. Was interesting to me because, no, to answer your question, absolutely not even a little bit did I see this. But you got to give Spoelstra and you got to give Riley credit for seeing something in Bam that others didn't, I think.
Yep.
Is there a residual effect of saying Bam, Hero, Murray? Will that help Tyrese Maxey?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And those Kentucky guys, I mean, listen, they know how to play with other good players. I think that's a big part of it too, you know, and that those are the guys having success in the NBA, because we used to say, hey, he's a, like Maxey, he's a 6'3", two guard, right? That's no longer a thing, you know? Like now teams are playing multiple guard lineups. You look at Van Vliet and Kyle Lowry. You look at Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder, and Shea. You know, it's about being able to catch and shoot, play off of closeouts, play second side pick and roll, and like fit in these different lineups. And so I think it benefits these Kentucky guys that they're used to doing those things.
I call them ball guards. And yeah, that's what guys are. All right, we'll let you go on this one. Give us two guys, names are going to come up earlier or even later, that are going to shock some folks.
I would say the main one that comes to mind for me is Patrick Williams, the kid out of Florida State.
Yeah.
I mean, just teams are, I think, enamored with the body, the length, the explosiveness. And he's probably has a little bit more with the ball, you know, than people thought. So he's one that I could see, you know, easily going in the top 10. You know, there are some international guys I won't bore you with. You know, there's a kid who's been playing out in Greece, Alexei Pokushevsky, like 7-footer, can handle, pass like a guard and shoot it. But the other name, American guy that comes to mind is Kyra Lewis. You know, I think he's someone who could also end up going in the lottery. You know, he's the age of a freshman, and he put up monster numbers this last year. Great kid, total jet with the ball. So those are two I would say have maybe not helped themselves because the pre-draft process has been obviously different, but, you know, could go higher than maybe we thought they would have, you know, 5 months ago.
It's funny. Kyra Lewis and Tyrell Terry both came to the Adidas All-American camp we had. And they were both kind of unknowns. Tyrell Terry reclassed right after that camp.
Yeah.
I'm not Tyrell Terry. Kyra Lewis reclassed right after. Actually, both of them reclassed, if I'm not mistaken. They're fascinating stories because they were both physically underdeveloped, but they were both playing for Brad during that week. And he was blown away by their feel. They didn't finish as well as they needed to because they just weren't strong enough. But it's amazing the years they had and what they've played themselves into.
Yeah. And I think that's what you're seeing in the NBA. You know, it's a lot of late bloomers, a lot of guys who were physically underdeveloped, you know, Steph, CJ McCollum, all these guys who were kind of, you know, they had the skill level, right? And it's just the body was waiting to catch up. And I think those guys are in that bucket.
That's awesome, Mike. Hey, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, Mike, thank you.
Putting up with Doc, it's your guy that throws socks at people and doesn't understand, you know, they like, you know, certain protocols. But, I mean, I'll have to deal with that later.
No, I'm with you, Seth. I'm with you, Seth.
Two wrong, one right.
Hey, Dan, smart people most times agree with me.
I wouldn't call me smart, but I appreciate you guys.
All right, man. Stay well.
You guys take care. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.